Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Hilary Ramo. She's an empathic intuitive, writer, certified spiritual counsellor, ordained non-denominational minister, and certified as a Reiki master, and is a member of the Sisters of Hanua. Are you there, Hilary?
Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, you're very welcome. I mean, I only read out a part of your great list of achievements, and looking at that, I can't imagine how you fitted so much in. I guess you must be about 150 years old by now.
Well, maybe centuries, soul-wise. I don't know.
Gosh, I don't know how you had time to breathe. I've never seen such a list of achievements. But anyway, that's wonderful. That gives us plenty to talk about. Now, having said that you are a member of the Sisters of Hanua, perhaps you might explain to us who they are and how you came to become a sister.
Sure. Well, I was invited into the circle, and it's a circle of women who are teachers from all different cultures and who bring their own individual teachings and work into a kind of co-creative collective circle of magic and wonder and different spiritual aspects of modalities and so on and so forth. So I was invited to come into the circle as a sister of Hanua. From the woman who founded it, Maria Yesperu. She's an Apache elder. And it's been quite a journey, and it's been a wonderful privilege to stand in circle with so many incredibly powerful women.
Indeed. Did you have to take any sort of initiation to become a member?
No. The members don't go through, I mean, we participate in ceremony together at different times of the year, perhaps at different events that we facilitate or we participate in. There is a Dream Seed Circle that I'm a member of, and it's kind of an organizational committee, if you will, circle that partakes in really making up some of the, administrative logistics to what our plans are and goals are. And, we really work hard at aligning the intention of the dream circles that we do, that's also associated with Sisters of Hanua. And those are facilitated by Sisters of Hanua and also other people as well, people who have, taken the initiative to form a dream circle in their own area because they believe in the cause and they want to participate in the dream work that we're doing. So the dream circles aren't necessarily always led by Sisters of Hanua. However, there are a handful of the women around the world who do actively facilitate those circles, and I'm one of those people, and I do in the upstate New York area, the northeastern United States area. And So I facilitate that group once a month on the new moon, and we do dreaming work based on healing the feminine consciousness and just really working with dream symbols and tools and different things along those lines. So the Sisters of Hanua is originally a group of women from different cultures who come together who are already out in the world working as teachers, and then there's different sub-circles underneath that, or beside that, I should say.
Right. I see that one of the features of the Sisters of Hanua is to encourage return of the ancient wisdom to heal ourselves and our planet. Does that feature very much in your own form of healing?
Yes. I think that getting back to basics is another way to put that, and it really does the same thing. I mean, getting back to our indigenous selves within us, within all people, is really about connecting back to the earth and connecting back to who we really are and, you know, learning our history, our not only cultural history, but, you know, spiritual history, our psychic history, connecting to our truth. And so I see it in a sense of helping people, you know, working as a midwife or as a teacher myself, you know, helping people do that, process that, what, you know, understand what that even means, you know. How do we kind of take ourselves out of the 21st century mindset and facilitate the realignment to our indigenous self? That's really what we're doing. I mean, indigenous to me means that we all come from something. We all come from, you know, ancestors. Regardless of our race or our skin color, we all come from something that has been before. And so really just connecting to that ancestral knowledge within those memories that live within our consciousness, not only collectively but, you know, cellularly, it's really about pulling that information and wisdom back to the front, the forefront, and learning how to work with that. And that's how my work ties in with this, yes.
Right. And I'm guessing that perhaps most of the ancient healing methods were probably every bit as successful, if not more so, than our modern day type of medicines.
Well, yeah, I mean, we really just have to get back to the basics, in a sense. You know, the healing process, not only physically, but emotionally, spiritually, and mentally, understanding what that even means. I mean, we really are so disconnected from that in so many ways that it really does affect every aspect of our lives on many levels.
Right. Now, at the tender age of 5, you had an experience that must have opened up your consciousness, and for someone of that age, that was perhaps quite surprising. Would you like to tell us what that was?
Sure. I've shared this many times. This is a story that I enjoy telling to people, because it was an extraordinary experience. Although when I was 5 years old, my grandfather took me through a past life regression spontaneously. He was meditating, and he was hooked up to a biofeedback machine that beeped with his heartbeat. And yes, as a child, I was very fascinated by that. So, of course, he just showed me what it was and how it worked. And so he hooked me up to it, and I was practicing lowering my heartbeat and, you know, manipulating the beep on the machine. So he says to me, "Do you want to go on a journey?" And I said, "Sure." So we ended up doing what some would call a guided meditation, but he took me into a past life regression. And I did. I met the parents of myself in a past life, and they were farmers in an area that looked to me at the time very much like upstate New York, where I currently live. And but it felt, I always had a very strong connection to England. And last year, in the fall of 2009, I had an opportunity to go to the UK, and it was very much the countryside that I experienced in the UK. There was just such a familiar thread of recognition in every aspect of my being that knew that that's where that was from. So looking back on that experience, I realized what a gift it was. When I was 5 years old, it was fun, and it was easy to do. And I didn't know it at the time that it was opening up my consciousness. I think my consciousness was already open as a child. I think children are very, very open as it is. And I think that what happens over time is that consciousness gets molded into something else, depending on their upbringing and their experiences, their education, and many, many things. So there was always an openness from that experience that stayed with me for many years after that, and still does today. And the fact that, you know, that kind of travel out of my body is very easy for me to do, I really do give a lot of credit to that experience, because it showed me that there was more to the physical, that I was able to experience something like that. And as I grew up, that's something that always remained with me. And that actually really did spur on some of the seeking that took place for many years in my seeking process. And I'm still seeking in a lot of ways. I'm always still learning and feeling out my path as I go. So it's, yes, that's a long way of answering your question, Michael.
Great. It's very, very interesting. I mean, just another point about that. When you met your parents from another life, did you immediately know them again?
Absolutely. At 5, I knew that they were my parents. When I came out of the meditation, it was extraordinarily emotional for me because the recognition was emotional. There was an emotional recognition. And just like you would recognize your child in a crowded room, you know, there's just that instant recognition. And to be honest with you, you know, my family, my parents were not prepared to deal with it. They didn't even know that I was going through that I had had the experience. And I was kind of, and I relate it to being one of those characters in a movie where I'm obsessively drawing pictures after something like a, you know, an experience like this. And that's really what I did. I wanted to go back. There was such an overwhelming, powerful feeling of love. Not that my parents didn't love me, but the recognition was so unusual. That was what really was more noticeable at that age. That, you know, was more difficult for me to understand because the only person that I had to describe that to me at that age was my grandfather, who was my first teacher. And he remained my teacher. He taught me tarot. He taught me remote viewing. He taught me how to do all of this stuff. So he was really my first teacher. So I hold a lot of weight on that experience because it was a very valuable teaching experience, and I still refer back to that many times throughout my career.
Mm. Yes, I'm sure you do. I mean, having learned to read the tarot cards, is that something you've been able to bring forward with you to help you in dealing, say, with your clients?
Well, yeah. I mean, he taught me how to read them, and this is what he said to me. He said, don't ever read a book on tarot, ever. He gave me my first deck when I was a child, and when he passed on, he handed me down his deck that he used, and I use that today. And it's the traditional deck, and he said, don't ever read a book on it. Don't ever read what the descriptions mean. Just do it purely from intuition. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I've done for almost 35, 40 years, is really sat down with these decks and studied them, but not studied them in the sense that I'm, you know, making sure I memorize what they all represent or mean. I am studying, in a sense, the symbols and what my intuition tells me about the deck, which is what he told me to do. So that's what I did. And so now when I do readings with them, I have never had a reading that didn't reveal something about the person sitting across from me. It's always worked. It's been pretty fascinating. And people ask me that all the time. They said, well, what's the best resource to read? And there's so many great people out there who are doing great things and writing fabulous books on the topic. And there's a lot of really talented people out there who do read it that way and do use them that way, and it works just as effectively. But from my experience, I was meant to do it strictly from intuitive senses.
Right. Yeah. Very, very clever, I would say. Now, you tell us that you've been to many different continents around the world in search of answers and understanding, which has led to amazing adventures. Now, one that catches my eye, because like a lot of people, I'm interested in the crystal skulls, is that you had ceremonies led by the Mayan priests. Did that actually involve the use of a crystal skull? Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, it did. And I had two different experiences with that. I had one in the United States and I had one in Peru. So they were two different ceremonies, different groups of people, both involved Mayans. And one was a fire ceremony that was very intentional, and the other one was quite a spontaneous ceremony, in the sense that it was something like, you know, written out of a book someplace. Peru was the first place I ever traveled to outside of the country, and my grandfather spent a lot of time in Peru and Guatemala. In fact, he lived there for several years, and he was very fond of the culture, and he was also very connected to the teachings down there. And so when he passed away, I made kind of agreement with him in spirit that would be a pilgrimage for me. So every year on the anniversary of his passing, I, for the last, almost 20 years, I've done something to honor him in this sense. And it started the first year with going to Sedona, the Southwest United States, and experiencing that fire ceremony with Mayan priests in more of like a setting that was conducive to a small group experiencing that. And the second time was traveling to Peru and to do it. And but I didn't go there intending to have that experience. I went down there to really just honor him and to experience the country and the culture. And at that point, I was really missing him in my life. He was an extraordinary guide and mentor to me, and I really wanted to honor him. So I did a walkabout in Peru, and the woman that I had gone down with, you know, we were just in the right place at the right time, and we were in this shop, and I had I was 5 months pregnant with my second son, to be exact. And so, you know, I was kind of, I was actually in really good shape, walking around the country, hiking in the Andes Mountains and climbing all these ruins, 5 months pregnant. And so she had asked this gentleman who owned a shop to bless the baby. And, you know, it was just so amazing. I mean, he just kind of didn't speak a word of English, spoke Quechua, and she spoke Quechua, and she was translating. And he closed down the shop, and there was nobody in it but the three of us. And, you know, he just did a full-blown crystal skull ceremony with different items, and it was just truly a very shamanic, very multi-dimensional experience. Mm-hmm. And I really wasn't expecting that when she asked him to bless the baby in my tummy, you know. Here I am pregnant, and I'm having this full, and it was really revealing because he read my leaves, and he did some other things as well. And on a personal level, it was definitely, I was not really ready for the information he was sharing with me and telling me, and I felt a lot of responsibility with what he was saying to me, and I just didn't think I was ready for it. But now, looking back on that experience, I see how much he was right. And a lot of the things that he was saying. So it was very appropriate. And so I find that the spontaneous, magical moments, the miracles that happen like this are really the authentically spirit-filled, you know, treasure map kind of markings.
Oh, that must be lovely. Now, you said that it was in Peru that you had this ceremony to become a healer. I mean, what did that involve? What happened that made you say a healer where you weren't one before, if that's the right way to interpret it?
Well, that's kind of the way I worded it in my bio that you have.
Yes.
But in reality, you know, the way that I look at being a healer is we're all healers in a sense. You know, we all offer something that aids in someone else's and our own healing process. There are people who pursue it consciously and actively and have more experience than other people doing it, or they come from certain lineages that they were born into it. I feel like I was born into it, Michael, because, you know, my grandfather just started working with me as soon as I was old enough to walk, and he really did shape me in a lot of these experiences. You know, I'm not a native indigenous person, but I am indigenous to my own culture. And, you know, those things of psychic and intuitive levels don't have a color or a race or anything attached to them. So I really have attached to that as my indigenous calling, that as my indigenous connection to healing. So as I grew up and experienced these things, it wasn't so much that, you know, once I had that ceremony, I was a healer, or once I'd studied with this person, I was a healer. I was a healer all along looking for who I was. It was kind of like me kind of looking around the room saying, have you seen Hillary? I don't know where she is. And that's the only really way I can answer that question, because it's evolved over time, I guess.
Oh, that's fine. Now, you also visited Egypt, which is another part of the world that I have a lot of interest in, but I've never heard of the group that you were initiated into called the Blue Lotus.
Well, it's not a group.
Isn't it?
It's a plant.
Right.
It's a flower. It's an actual flower. It's not a group. And this was another spontaneous kind of happening as well. And I'll set it up a little bit here. Excuse me. Yes, the Blue Lotus in Egypt was quite an extraordinary experience. But before I kind of talk about that, I want to let people know that this was my second trip to Egypt. And my first trip was an extraordinary opening of consciousness for me. There is something about going to these places of ancient origin, of, you know, that really just literally connects you to something that's extraordinarily powerful. I was having a conversation once with Marilyn Black Elk, Black Elk's daughter, and I asked her that question. And I said, how come when I go to these places, I feel such a connection to something that I don't feel necessarily when I just close my eyes and imagine myself there, or if I'm just kind of walking around, you know, in other places? And she said her answer to me was, because when you go to these old places, when you go to like the pyramids on Giza, or you go to Machu Picchu in Peru, or you go to the southwest ruins of the Apache or the Hopi, or you go to, you know, any pyramid around, any other ancient ruin like that, or the ruins in Greece, or, you know, whatever, you're connecting to the star beings, you're connecting to the star cultures, who gave that information on how to align those temples with the morphic grids and all of these other really complicated energy systems that we have lost the understanding to. There's a few people in this world, many people, you know, a few people who have maintained that knowledge, but it's not common knowledge. It's not something that the masses, the general population, still understand. So when you go to these places, there's a remembrance that happens. There's an opening of consciousness that happens. And that's exactly what happens to me when I go to these places and to everyone else I know who goes to these places. Yeah. And it doesn't matter where you go. You're going to be called to certain areas around the planet where you've just kind of always wanted to go, or you've always been intrigued by. And that's your spirit calling you back to those places, because at some point in your soul journey, you have some connection there, to waken up those conscious memories, to waken up those DNA memories, and to really allow that to start, you know, the codes open you up. And so you experience that when you go to these places. Now, in Egypt, when you walk around and you look at these temples and you walk through them, you'll notice on the walls that there are a tremendous amount of reliefs with lotuses. Lotuses were one of the most sacred plants in the Egyptian culture. I'm not an Egyptologist, but I can tell you, you don't have to be one to notice that when you go and do a walkabout in Egypt. You will see that for yourself in every temple you visit. And you have to say, oh, that it's not just a decorative icon that they're putting on their walls. The Egyptians didn't put anything on their walls that didn't mean something significant. Mm-hmm. The blue lotus was an actual flower. Now, I'm not talking about the river valley, the lily, the water lily. I'm not talking about the blue water lily. I'm talking about the blue lotus. Was a sacred plant to the Nile, and it was grown, and it was harvested, and it was used in ceremony, and the perfume was very, very sacred to them. There were supposedly mild hallucinogenic properties to the plant. And along those lines, so they were used in the high priest ceremony, and there's not a lot of information available about that. Helena Blavatsky wrote about the blue lotus and the secret doctrine. She made several references to it there. You can find it if you dig, but it's not very commonly known. So, you know, we were sitting there in Luxor. We were having our lunch, and a friend of mine who I was with at the time happened to see somebody who just happened to be sitting there, and she recognized him. She'd traveled to Egypt for many years, 20-something years. And, you know, I was sitting there just kind of minding my own business, because I figured that this was just, you know, her saying hi to another person she knew in Egypt. She knew seemed to know everybody. And it turned out that he had actually regrown some of these flowers, and he, you know, we just happened to be in the right place at the right time. You know how that works.
Yes.
And he drove us down to where he had them, and we were able to work with the plants. And when I say work with the plants, I ingested some of the plant, not all of it, some of it. I didn't have any hallucinogenic effects. I didn't feel anything. But what I did feel was a really incredibly powerful connection to it. you know, and I have a great respect for power plants, and I have a great respect for the plant kingdom and what they teach us. So they're living, vibrating, conscious beings as far as I'm concerned. And so to meet this plant and to know that this is what was so sacred and so special at the time was a great honor for me. And it was like meeting, you know, Buddha or Jesus or some great teacher that, you know, you just, what would you do if you met them? You know, you'd be pretty humbled. And so this plant to me had that same kind of austere, you know, this kind of royal, regal feeling and energy to it. And it was just the most beautiful, beautiful thing. So we did a private, closed ceremony around the plant, and you know, it's very special. And I don't talk about what happened there. I don't want to share that. It's private. But it was something that was very, very changing for me. So I work with the essential oil now. The essential oil is extraordinarily rare to find. But if you can find it and you're able to work with it, you can work with it in the same way. So it was my teacher. It was the group.
Right, yes. No wonder I didn't recognize them. I didn't actually think of the lotus in reality. I just thought that was a name. Never mind. What did you think of Stonehenge?
Hopefully you enjoyed the story just as much.
What did you think of Stonehenge when you came to England?
Oh, Stonehenge. You know, I love the UK. I love London. I love the city. I really fell in love with it when I came over, and I was just so, I just loved Stonehenge, and I just really could have, I wish I could have gone inside. We weren't able to, you know, we were just there nonchalantly. I was there with Thomas Campbell. He's a NASA scientist, and he does a lot of speaking on higher consciousness. And him and I were there with the two event promoters that had brought us over. We were there for a film premiere for The Path. And so as a perk, we were brought over to Stonehenge to see the site. So it was a very casual, you know, small thing. And just standing there for me was profound. I mean, I could just feel the magic and the power from the countryside, and I had this whole past life thing coming up for me, and the memories were just pouring out of me, and it was just very beautiful and soft and powerful for me.
Right,
and
yes.
I really liked Stonehenge. I really think it's there's a lot going on there.
Oh, I think so, yes. Very, very important site. I had a friend who's passed over now, who remembers a previous life when the Avebury Circle was active, and she said at certain times when energies were being beamed to the earth, she and others used to dance around the circle and effectively bring the energies in and ground them, which I thought was a nice story.
Hmm. Well, I went to Avebury, and I did see those stone circles, and they're definitely something. And you can almost feel the footprints or the echoes of the ancestors that have come before us and have done those ceremonies. And it's very sacred space. And, you know, and you would think that with as many people that come through there to see it or to visit it would take away from that. And I didn't feel that at all. And I have felt that in places before. And there's just something very dynamic about those locations in the UK that have to do with the earth, geomancy, where they're located, I think is just part of, you know, really powerful vortexes. And, you
yes.
know, if anybody listening can get there, I highly, highly suggest to go at some point in your lifetime to make a point to at least experience these places.
Yes. Now, just finally, the last port of call here on your travels, what did you find out about Machu Picchu? Because am I correct in thinking that the activities there go back many, many thousands of years?
You mean with Machu Picchu in Peru?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, what did I think about the energies there? Mm. You know, I would like to go back. Because it's been so long since I've been there, I would like to go back and see what I experienced, bringing the experience that I've had in between the first time I went and now would be quite interesting, I think. But when I was there, there was a very strong pull to what was underneath the city for
yes.
me, personally. And I remember sitting there and meditating at different spots in the city. We had so much time to just explore and be and sit and dream, and I was so, so thankful for that. This, you know, the woman who did it, this was just such an incredibly gifted. Vera Lopez was the one who took me, and some. It was a group that we went down with, and she was just so incredibly gifted at how she coordinated it. So we had a lot of time to just really be with ourselves in that place. And so what I found myself doing was really just kind of going over to different places that seemed to have kind of an entrance way down. There was a specific place in the city that was off the main courtyard that was actually closed off with rocks, and the tour person who we were working with, who was native to the area, said that that was intentionally closed off so people wouldn't go down. And there are tunnels underneath the city. That is a known fact. So to me, what I recall from my first trip there was feeling that very, very, very strong pull to that part of Machu Picchu.
From what I've read about it, I seem to feel that it must have some connection many thousands of years ago with the Atlanteans.
It's got a connection to the star beings, is what I felt. And you know, who the Atlanteans were and where they came from is debatable. You know, a lot of people have a lot of different theories on Atlanteans and Lemurians and those two different cultures. But what I felt was a very distinct connection to the star beings. And I have felt that in every single ruin that I have visited, you know, of significant, of significant size and age. I have really felt that. I have felt that connection to star people, and that's been consistent. I didn't necessarily understand it at that time. I was kind of in the beginning stages of really putting all the pieces together myself. But now, looking back, now if I were to go, I would definitely be able to identify that much, much more clear, I think.
Yes, right. Now, you mentioned that in 2007 you had a near-death experience. And was that, like most people's experiences, something that really changed the direction of your life?
Well, yeah, it did. I mean, what happened was, at that point in my life, I was doing the work that I do now, although not on the level that I do it now. But I was also in real estate, so I was kind of working, you know, the typical job kind of thing, and trying to, you know, balance it with the other stuff that I was doing, and that was difficult for me to do. But you know how things kind of have their own way of happening, in a sense, when you're not really doing what you're supposed to be doing. And what I was supposed to be doing at the time was really pouring all of my energy into doing my healing work and you know, writing full time. And so I was really struggling with that. I was really fighting with that. And I was in a very high, demanding job. And it was very difficult to balance that at some point. So that's where my struggle was. And then, you know, I had a very significant health challenge happen, and, you know, the process of all of that, what came out of that was a very distinct agreement between me and Creator, me and my idea of Creator, the spirit aspect of it, was to completely pour myself into the work that I'm doing now. And really, that's what was asked of me. And I was told very, very clearly that that's what I had to do, that there was no more time to just kind of dabble in it or explore it or want to be, not be a teacher and always be a student and just follow people around and study with this person, because that's what I was really kind of doing in some senses for many years, was following this person, following that person, following this person, gathering information, gathering knowledge, which was very useful at those times. But there was a part of me that wanted to stay there in many senses, that didn't really want to step out onto the platform as a teacher. And so there's a distinct difference between being a teacher and being a student full time.
Right.
Not that we're never done learning, but you know what I mean.
Yes. Oh, yes, indeed.
And so, you know, my radio show evolved that year. I traveled to, you know, to places like Mount Shasta to do ceremony, personal ceremony by myself. I made a lot of personal pilgrimages to different places. And just really, you know, let go of the real estate career, let it go. I said goodbye to it. I let it go. I spent a lot of time with my family, my children, and really regrouped all of my energy and really just spent a tremendous amount of time reflecting on what I had learned and what I had studied and what I had experienced. And, okay, now what am I going to do with this? You know, who am I as a teacher? Who am I as somebody who goes out? How am I going to work with people? What are my gifts and what are my, you know, experiences that give me the credit to be out there as a teacher? So that's really what happened. And that whole year following that instance was life-changing for me. And I've been doing radio ever since. I have a show on Thursday nights. You know, people can go to my website, they can go to HillaryRamo.com, and they can see, you know, what I have going on. They can read my experiences. And I do have credentials behind my name for people who really need that. And I just don't really bother with trying to prove who I am anymore. I don't, you know, people come to me, they can work with me, or they can't, they don't have to work with me.
Right.
You know, and I have people, I work with clients all over the world. I work with people on the phone. I work with people in person. And, you know, the relation, I work as a shamanic practitioner, I work as an energy healer, I work as a clairvoyant and as a channel. And those are the three areas that I work in. Mm. And that's what's come out, that's what came out of that experience. You know, I had to fully walk into that, you know.
Well, you mention it as a time when you began working with healing earth grids, personal grids on the body and cosmic grids. But you say that this was the result of beings of light that showed you how to do so. Did you know where these beings came from?
You know, not at the time when I first started. I mean, they've always been in my life, and they have always had, you know, when I was younger, I perceived them as like very like angels, you know, and then as I got older, I perceived them as, you know, guides, and I would kind of, I think they go through filters. I mean, this has been my experience, and this is what, you know, I feel is relevant, is that each person will see their guide in whatever mind frame they're in. So if they're working within a, you know, an Eastern tradition, they'll see them within Eastern context. If they're working in a very religious, you know, context, they're going to see their guides as religious figures.
Yes.
So as I morphed through my training and all of these other things that I've experienced and the things that I were ready to experience, I would see them in different stages. But there is a particular being, a particular group of beings that have not changed. And for me, those are the primary guides I work with now. And I do feel that they are star beings, and I do feel that they are connected to the Pleiades. And, you know, I really struggled with talking about that openly for a long time, and I just don't have a problem with it anymore. So
no,
I just share it the way it is. So, and that's what I do now.
Yeah. Well, I think the mention of such beings is no longer shocking people.
No, I don't. I agree. Yes.
I think they've got used to the idea that life does exist beyond the earth, and they don't treat you as a crank anymore. Now, what exactly is it you're aiming to do with people?
Well, what am I aiming to do with people? I don't really have any aim when they come to me. I know that when different people come to me, they're coming for different reasons. I work as a healer. They know that. So they're coming to me obviously because they have some kind of issue that they're willing to walk into at that point. And usually by the time they get to me, you know, because I work in such different realms as traditional healing or therapy, and I do have a background in psychology, but they usually have exhausted those. And so they're coming to me and they're, oh, you know, something you wrote here really resonated with me, or, you know, I heard you on this and something really resonated with me, you know, or whatever, however it happens, there's always some kind of connection or resonation. And
yes.
they resonate at that. So they come and then we'll have a conversation about what they're experiencing and what they tell me guides me to what's going to happen with their healing processes. I mean, I have a 13-month healing program that I do with people. It's a 13 lunar month calendar, and you know, they commit for a whole year, basically a whole lunar year, to work with me in a healing setting. So I work as a shamanic guide, I work as a shamanic teacher, I work as a channel and a facilitator of energies, and I really just go deeply into what each person is experiencing at the moment. And it's really not a cookie cutter thing, and it shouldn't be. It's an individual to each person, because we're all different, and we all come from different experiences, and we all have different paths in a sense. So it's not always going to be the same for each person. But the process for me as a teacher or as a guide, I like to consider myself more of a guide now at this point, a mentor or guide through different things. I will show you a doorway, and it's up to you to walk through it. You know, yes. It doesn't mean that I'm going to fix you. I will never fix anybody. That's not appropriate. That's taking power from somebody. But I will definitely hold up a mirror and show you what you're doing and how you react to that. And it's about learning how to go into your own energy and facilitate those landscapes within to facilitate the actual healing. The actual healing comes from the person themselves. And so sometimes we just need help doing that, or help seeing something alternatively, because we have been so ingrained with a mindset that teaches us we are not multidimensional. We are nothing more than our five senses in our body. And so many people have to break out of that paradigm to even realize what healing is. And I always share this, and this is a very important fact to remember, is that the healing process makes us ask why. The true healing process, not the drugs and the surgeries and the hospitalizations. We're talking about the true healing process. Why does Reiki work? Why does hands-on energy work? Well, what are we? You know, and then that process begins an unfolding or a shedding and an opening of truth for people. And they realize that there is more to life. There is more to who they are. There is a multidimensionality to their body and their energy fields. And so it makes them explore. And that's the part that I love to my work, is watching and being a midwife, in a sense, to having people birth themselves into that reality. And that's how I see it. And I know that's a very... it's not a linear process for me and my work. My work is not linear by any means.
Mm. So what exactly do you mean when you say that your healing work is to connect people with the unseen elements of life?
Well, just what I said. I mean, the unseen elements of life are these, you know, the energetic aspects of life, the, you know, understanding emotional energy in yourself and how it ripples out and touches each person in the room that you're sitting in. You know, we think that we're so disconnected from everything. And the unseen really is that fabric that, you know, is standing, is there between me and you, even right now, or me in the bookcase right here, or, you know, whatever there is. There's this whole sea of ether around us that holds a tremendous amount of energy, beings, you know, entities, things that just live within that, that it's this whole spirit world that envelops around us that we don't even pay attention to. So facilitating a relationship with the unseen is really just a beautiful thing, and that's really where my healing work comes into.
Right. Just getting back to your guides for a moment, what did they tell you about the significance of the 2012 alignment? Because there is a terrific lot of talk about the end times of 2012 at the moment.
Well, they told me that nothing's going to end, in the sense that everything continues eternally anyway. So the ending part is the fear paradigm that, you know, the people in control are trying to play on to us. And a lot of people are perpetuating the fear thing because they're hooked in some way or another into that kind of mindset. My guides tell me very clearly that, you know, we have already been experiencing, you know, the shift. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world. The breakdown of economies has to do with it. The breakdown, the weather cycles changing, is all part of it. And so we're already in it. It's not something that's going to happen on that day. We have a very powerful winter solstice coming up next week with the eclipse on the full moon. And so we're already experiencing a lot of these really, really traumatic energy, not traumatic, but dramatic energies that are coming into our space and stirring things up. And so if we're not centered, if we don't know who we are, if we haven't done the work, if we haven't healed all of our insecurities and, you know, powerless, you know, ways of seeing life, then we really are going to have a hard time. It's kind of like vibration. If you can imagine two things vibrating next to each other and, you know, one of them starts raising its vibration, it's going to throw the other one off unless it changes its vibration too. So that's really what we're experiencing, this change of who we are as a species even. You know, we're learning to come more from the heart than from the head. We're learning to change our way of thinking collectively from consumerism, capitalism, dominating other people on this planet, or, you know, coming from ego into something that has more to do with a co-creative, I am the same, there is nobody above me or below me, we're all equals. And that's really how I see it, and also what my guides have told me in the process. And so you have a choice. I mean, you can ride this wave. It's like a wave of energy that's coming through. There's different energy coming from the black hole centers that is facilitating the changes through our suns and in our galaxy. And the planets are absorbing that energy, and every living thing on all the planets are absorbing that energy. So there's a great shift going on because we're all connected to these cycles. We're all connected to everything. And so why I feel so passionate about my work and what I'm doing has to do with the fact that people don't even know that they're connected to anything. Mm. So they're missing that incredible, empowered, beautiful stance, peaceful stance of knowing who they are and how they are affected by everything. You know, the sunspots exploding on the Earth right now affect us, and not just our communication systems, not just our cell phone usage, but our hearts and our own electromagnetic systems and, you know, how we function. So if we're not connected, if we're not in our body, if we're not part of our own self, then, you know, our electromagnetic system starts changing, then we really do experience physical symptoms. We experience emotional symptoms, spiritual symptoms, yes. You know, intellectual, mental symptoms that really will reflect, you know, who and what we are. And if I'm stuck in a pitiful, victimized state of mind that has to do with seeing the world as an ugly, dark place that's scary and everything out there is horrible and people are mean, that is going to be amplified tenfold. But so I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was simply going to make an observation there that it appears what is happening is that things are being reflected back to us that we need to put into order or balance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what mirrors us. I mean, there is a balance to all of this. It's not like there's no hope, and, you know, you have to run out and find people who heal that. You have to understand the relationship between the mirrors and what they show you and what they reflect inside of you. And that's pretty much how it works. If you can take a look at, you know, how you're, wow, I'm really mad today, I'm really angry, and I really hate this person standing in front of me right now, but they have done nothing to you, and they just maybe remind you of somebody else who has hurt you in the past, then that's where that comes in as being a useful tool. Because you can take a look at that wound that is obviously still there being projected onto somebody else that has nothing to do with that other person, but just simply perpetuates the wounding. So if we don't look inside, we're not even bothering to take responsibility for that wound. We're not even taking responsibility for our own part in playing out that projection. And so the wounding simply ripples out from that person and then goes on to the next person they start having a problem with. So we really are co-creating a world of vibrational energy that has to do with wherever we're coming from. So if we learn to come from a positive heart space, and that's not to say that we're not going to have problems, you know, that we're not going to feel sad or we're not going to get angry or we're not going to, you know, feel those kinds of emotions that we have labeled as negative necessarily. We are certainly going to still feel them, but we will not process them the same way.
Hmm. Yes, I think you put that very well and very understandable. Now, you've written a whole ream of articles and things for magazines and goodness knows what else, but I see amongst your list you appear to have written, is it only the one book, Money Matters for Mind, Body and Spirit? Is that still something that you're pushing now, or have you moved away from that period?
Yeah, I do have it. It is still available. People can buy it. I wrote it in 2007. After my health crisis. And actually, I had started writing it before that, and then I just stopped. And so that was one of the agreements I had made, that I would finish writing that manuscript and I would publish it. And I did. So that was kind of an agreement that I had made with many different things. Mm. And it was about financial abundance and our relationship with money and how you can find healing in that. And it was a good book for me to write at the time, because I saw a lot of people suffering when it came to understanding money, and I realized that their relationship with money was much like their relationship with the people in their lives. You know, it was an interesting connection that I was observing as I was researching and interviewing people for the book and working on it, that I'd say 99.9% of the time there was always a connection between, a mirror reflection connection between the relationship that they had with anything. I mean, you can take any one thing and put it in there and study the relationship that a person has with that thing. You know, food, you know, work. You can put any kind of thing. It's like a psychological process, really. And you can study it. You can take a look at what the habits are and what the opinions are and how do you feel about money physically? Do you pay your bills on time? How do you manage your money? Do you respect it in the sense that, you know, you provide for yourself in a healthy way? What are your emotional relationship with money? You know, do you hate it? Do you resent it because when you were growing up, mom and dad fought over it all the time? Or do you feel unworthy about it? Those kind of things. Spiritually, you know, how does money fit into your spiritual life? Does it? Do you reject money because it doesn't seem like it's a spiritual thing? And so there was a whole teaching around that. And then there was the whole mental thing. What are your thought mindsets about money? You know, what do you believe about money? You know, do you doubt your ability to be able to manage it or understand it or to go into it? So that whole book was a process of taking people around a wheel, if you will, of understanding the relationship with money from a holistic perspective. And I talked about it at a bunch of conferences. I spoke at some colleges. I spoke to some women's financial groups over it. And they all really enjoyed it. It was a very well-received program that was associated with the book. But yes, I have kind of moved away from it, but only in the sense that I'm not speaking on it so much anymore or, you know, working on it like that. But the concepts in that book are still very much related to the healing work that I do, because I do isolate those kind of relationships that my clients or students have, and we study them to see where we need more healing until we're whole, really, until the healing is done, in whatever appropriate sense that means to each.
Right, yes. Now, believe it or not, coming into the last few minutes of the program, and I will need the last minute to announce next week's guest. You might like to give your website address again, and do you give out your telephone number in as much that you do telephone consultations?
People can reach me through my website. They can go to hillaryraimo.com. That's HillaryRaimo.com. I'm on Facebook. You know, I do all the social stuff. Mm-hmm. The best way to contact me is through my website or by email, which is hillary@hillaryraimo.com. I do not give my phone number out, but when people do phone sessions, they are given a number or a Skype number to call, which I have set up strictly for that.
Right, that's fine. As a final comment before I thank you very much for coming onto the program, it's been terrific listening to you speak. You've got such a lot of experience. Do you have a vital message for our listeners?
The vital message right now is to just really, you know, breathe and just be, you know, accepting of who you are and understand that, you know, the mysteries of the world are always revealed in the right time. And if you're frustrated with what's going on in your life, or you're feeling like you're not, it's not clicking for you quick enough, you know, sit back and just let it happen naturally. And the world is going through such an amazing change right now. We are experiencing so many wonderful opportunities for expansion. And my biggest message to everybody is to do it together, to not isolate yourself and to not, you know, put up fences around you, but to also respect other people's boundaries and their own healing process. I think that's one of the biggest things I come across most often is people who want to really, you know, kind of cross over into your boundaries and keep trying to get there. That's not healing. That's imposing. So right. a healing space with each other, we're kind of learning what that means. And so we have to trust the process and trust our own vulnerabilities and what that, you know, what those are with people. And so as we learn to move into these new ages that we're experiencing, we're redefining relationship.
Right. That's excellent. Thank you very much. As I said, it's been excellent to speak with you and terrifically interesting. Thank you very, very much for coming onto the program, and I wish you every success for the future.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Michael, and I really appreciate the opportunity and the work that you do. It's really quite refreshing.
You're welcome. Thank you. Friends, next week I'll have Betsy Thompson, who has written a book called Walking Through Illusion, Jesus Speaks of the People Who Shared His Journey. And she makes the point that the book is not about Christianity. It is about people who lived long before Christianity began. And I've read the book, and I can tell you it's terrifically interesting. And I've got lots of good questions to ask her. So thank you for being with me today. I do hope you can be with me next week. Thank you very much.